This week on WealthTrack, making money while making a difference. Two experts on socially responsible investing, Lisa Wall and Laura LaRosa, explain how to do both. Next on Consuelo Mack, WealthTrack. Hello and welcome to this edition of WealthTrack. I'm Consuelo Mack. Investing to make money while making a difference has become a big business. U.S. assets in the categories known as sustainable, responsible, or impact investments grew 38% over the last 2 years by more than $3 trillion to $12 trillion. That means that 26% of U.S. assets under professional management, that's $1 in $4 of the $46.6 trillion in total U.S. assets, are invested in what are called sustainable investing strategies. According to the biannual report from the Forum for Sustainable and Responsible Investment, known as USCIF, money managers for institutional investors control about $8.6 trillion of the socially responsible investments, while about $3 trillion is controlled by individual investors or their money managers. Since USCIF began tracking the data in 1995, sustainable and responsible investment assets have grown at a compound annual growth rate of 13.6%. What started out as a niche for faith-based investing in the 50s and 60s has gone mainstream. As socially responsible investing has evolved, so has its nomenclature and scope. Socially responsible went from avoiding certain so-called sin stocks and businesses such as alcohol, tobacco, and weapons to taking into consideration a company's environmental, social, and governance practices known as ESG. Well, that has now broadened to what's known as sustainable or impact investing, a term introduced in 2007, which considers the impact a company or industry has on a range of issues and stakeholders far beyond the shareholders. Companies are now evaluated on how they manage their employees, diversity in management and on boards, practices with customers, suppliers, communities, natural resources, and climate impact. What's driving the boom in socially responsible investing? Is it truly sustainable? This week's WealthTrack guests are deeply involved in values-based investing. Lisa Wall has been the CEO of USCIF, the Forum for Sustainable and Responsible Investment, and the USCIF Foundation since 2006. USCIF and its foundation are leading voices in research, education, and policy initiatives for sustainable, responsible, and impact investing across all asset classes. Its 300 members represent $3 trillion in assets under management or advisement in sustainable investments. Laura LaRosa is Executive Director of Client Development at Glenn Mead, where she oversees business development and relationships with clients. She is also a member of the Management Committee and Investment Policy Committee. LaRosa has been deeply involved in Glenn Mead's impact investing strategies, which include U.S. equity strategies for both responsible ESG and companies with women in leadership. Established in 1956 by the Pew family to manage their trust, Glenn Mead is now the world's third largest independent multifamily office with more than $40 billion in assets under management. I began our discussion by asking why sustainable investing is attracting so many investment dollars.
I think there's several reasons. Increasing concern about issues like climate change and how we're going to solve that. Demand. From a broad range of investors.
Right, where's it coming from? I mean, you know, the assets, obviously, institutional assets are huge and they're the bulk of it. Why are institutions and institutional investors driving ESG investing?
Well, what's interesting is that of that 12 trillion number, 3 trillion is retail investors.
Right.
So that's, I think, a really interesting piece because it means that investors who may not have access to a financial professional to do their investing for them are finding products in the market that they can utilize in order to use a sustainable investment strategy. And I think different institutional investors have different reasons. You've got demand, you've got mission, you've got fiduciary duty, you've got risk. The idea of sustainable investment is in some ways the same as it was in the 70s, but you now have, instead of only a values-based discussion, you also have a discussion about risk, of not considering ESG issues and the opportunities that the consideration of environmental, social, and governance issues present in making better investments.
So why is it less risky to do sustainable impact investing?
Because if you're thinking about as a long-term investor, which is inherent in the in the definition of sustainable investment to not be a quarterly investor, but a years-long investor.
Right.
You want to be looking at what is climate change going to do to our ability to access clean water? What is going to happen if we still have boards that are 100% white male? Mm-hmm. I mean, what are our risks down the pike if we're not looking at diversity in hiring? What are our risks as a society if we're not bringing people's wages up to a level where you can have a reasonable lifestyle? These are all considerations you should be looking at in the investment process.
Right. No, and that long-term lens is really critical. So, Laura, talk to us about your Glenmead experience and the fact that you're getting much more involved in sustainable investing. And where is that coming from at Glenmead?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So, you know, we basically started our head of quantitative research and one of our big clients started a conversation in 2001. To have us say, could you build me a portfolio that will have an environmental tilt to conservation?
That was early. Right.
And so he said, sure, I think we can do that. We'll figure out some screens and we'll do that. And that was really the beginning. But we began to get much more serious about this about 5 years ago. And I think that, when you talk about risk, what you see when you think about environmentally, socially good governance companies, they have a lot less risk because they're much more diverse in their thinking. Mm-hmm. And so there's two components to the risk discussion, right? It's a little bit different. Where we're seeing a lot of interest, obviously, is in the endowment and foundation world, especially in foundations, right? The family foundations are interested.
Right.
But also the rising generation of investors is very, very interested mm-hmm. in this. And women, as a rule, are very interested in this. So it's really a great thing to watch.
Let's talk about performance, which is something that has come up. Now, I mean, I've been a financial journalist for many years, and certainly this was, you know, socially responsible investing was considered to be a fringe type of investing. And the objection that always came up among professional investors was, performance, we're being paid, our responsibility is to deliver performance, not to do good. That was always the delineating factor. But now we've got performance.
Well, what's interesting is that we always lead with that conversation. And one of the questions we've been asked by journalists since we launched the Trends Report is, we haven't been asked the question about performance. And this is really the first time where that hasn't come up as one of the top three questions.
Huh.
Because there's been so much data that's been put out mm-hmm. in studies, we have a whole ream of them on our website, about the fact that not only does performance not suffer, but in many cases, it can be a better predictor of performance. I say the other piece is fossil fuel divestment, for example, has become a much bigger strand of mm-hmm. investment over the last few years because people want to take that out for climate reasons. And you're seeing investors saying you can pull out that entire sector mm-hmm. of fossil fuels and not see a performance drop. I don't know if you're seeing that among your clients as well.
We haven't really looked at that particular aspect because we try to say, you know, it's best not to do away with a whole mm-hmm. entire sector. So because of the diversification
right.
factor. But what we do think is that the negative screening is where you get a lot of dispersion of returns.
Right.
If you have a positive tilting portfolio and you tilt towards the companies that do really well from an environmental, social, and good governance point of view, or women in leadership even, that's where you see really nice returns and competitive returns. Actually, you can probably get outsized. We think sometimes you can get outsized returns because the companies are so well managed.
Right. So that's interesting because originally, socially responsible investing was eliminating vices or
Correct.
Eliminating tobacco and defense stocks and fossil fuels, whatever. But I know you said there's been an evolution, Laura, in that it's more proactive. It's actually more positive where you're looking at best practices.
Yes,
and
best
so it doesn't exclude necessarily the fossil fuels that Lisa was talking about, but you're looking for best practices within a sector. So. Right,
like
yes,
lowest carbon footprint.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's easy, right?
Right?
So you can then judge very real things and still have a well-diversified.
Yeah, you can do a variety of things. You can do negative screening, you can do positive screening, which mm-hmm. is what Laura's talking about. You can do thematic investing. I'm going to invest in sustainable agriculture or mm-hmm. gender lens. And then you can do broad ESG integration where you're looking at a range of ESG criteria across your whole portfolio. All of these are very legitimate, well-used strategies by investors.
So it's a very diverse approach, actually. So you've got a lot of choices.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about some other trends, Lisa, that you were tracking shareholder resolution money, right, as well?
Right.
And this is, so explain what that is on ESG issues. You had $1.8 trillion in the last 2 years. What does that mean?
What that means is if you own an individual stock as differentiated from a mutual fund, where
right.
you don't hold that stock directly, you can bring a shareholder proposal to a company if you own more than $2,000 of that stock and you've held it for a year.
Only $2,000.
And so when you look at companies who have changed the way they manage climate risk, who have changed their policies around gay rights, who have changed their policies around women being put on boards and in senior level management, a lot of that has been driven by investors who have brought proposals at annual meetings or engaged with the CEO and the board without a proposal, but sort of saying we're going to bring a proposal at the annual meeting. So the change that investors have brought, including the New York City State, New York City pension funds have been very active in this, has been quite phenomenal in driving environmental, social, and good governance changes like say on pay at companies all across the country.
And Glenn Mead's getting more active as well in this
Absolutely.
Proxy fights.
I think that's one of the things that we feel very strongly about, that it's important to vote the proxies and
right.
it's important to really get involved in shareholder resolutions because that's where you can see change. And that's, you know, that's what's driving a lot of this. You know, you can't expect a company to just automatically do it on their own without a suggestion, right?
Mm-hmm.
How about you release the
right.
fact that what you pay men and women are equal? Because
Correct.
It would be really good for the price of the stock. Oh, okay.
Right.
You know.
And what I would say is for a lot of the folks watching this show who do own individual stocks, they probably get their proxy ballot
yes.
in the
yes.
mail, and they probably then,
just
I hope,
it
recycle
out.
It.
Right.
Recycle it, right?
Recycle it,
and
right.
So, it's actually really fun to do. You feel super empowered when
yeah.
you go and you look at what's behind this and do I really want to vote with management or do I want to vote a different way? And so don't recycle or throw those away anymore. You should
mm-hmm.
definitely vote those proxies.
And we're seeing a trend among institutional investors as well. And this is one of the things that Jack Bogle, who used to be at Vanguard, obviously started the first index fund, has been pushing, is that institutional investors have been too passive.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And now we're seeing major institutional investors, being Vanguard, BlackRock, State Street, that are taking a more active role.
Right.
Let me ask you, Laura, Glenn Mead has two ESG mutual funds, both started in late 2015, and they've both done quite well.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a responsible ESG U.S. equity portfolio, large cap, and you've got a women in leadership U.S. equity portfolio. I'm curious, the women in leadership to actually have a mutual fund devoted to the women in leadership question. Tell us, you know, why that's an important criteria, number one, and why you're doing it.
So it's interesting because, you know, even though we are a privately owned company and we're you know, $40 billion in assets, there are 9 people on our management committee,
mm-hmm.
5 of us are women.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we find fascinating about that is that we think that we have, you know, very strong returns. And we look at this and we say, we believe in this. So why don't we put this out as a proxy? So what's interesting about the Women in Leadership strategy is it uses all of the ESG components as well, but then has this layer of diversity that you can get by having more women involved in the company. So either a woman chair or a woman CEO, 25% of your senior management on that are women.
Mm-hmm.
Or
so that's a criteria, 25% of the senior management are women. That's,
yes.
that's how you get
yes.
into the portfolio as well.
Exactly.
Right.
Or one of the four, or that you have a 25% women on the board.
Right.
So it really does that. What we've found when we do the due diligence is that diversification really proves that the companies that have that kind of diverse thinking really are very profitable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that brings up the thing that we were talking about, which is, you know, you have to be deliberate about impact investing,
mm-hmm.
not just say, okay, well, I own these really great companies in my portfolio and they happen to screen really well, so I'm an impact
right.
investor. You really do have to be deliberate about it. So
huh.
I think that's that's a new thing that we're seeing more, right, is people claiming.
Right, and what I would say is that the data piece of that is super important because if
right.
you don't get good data that enables you to, let's say, screen, look at how one, let's say, food manufacturer compares against another, it's right. very hard to make that choice. And so one of the things we've been very involved in at USCIF is trying to get the Securities and Exchange Commission to mandate required ESG disclosure so that investors could get a set of comparable yeah. data. And right. so could other stakeholders who are engaged in this work. And so that hasn't happened yet.
So that's required in some countries in Europe, right?
That you they're moving towards more requirements around okay. disclosing that kind of data. We're still very much dependent on different kinds of voluntary activities
compliance
for the most
or,
part.
It's still difficult, in other words, Lisa, to you've got to really do your homework to figure out what companies are actually practicing ESG policies. So, versus those who are yeah. say they are but aren't?
I would say that any investor has to do their due diligence, whatever the product. And so you start there. And so I always tell journalists, because I often get that question, is it's the same process. And so when we did the trends report several years ago, we saw that there was a big sum of assets that were unidentified ESG assets. So we didn't know what criteria they were using. It's called unidentified ESG integration. Very quickly, we did a report on that. And what we saw were there were multiple approaches, some with more transparency than others. And so we really have made it a goal of ours to try to push best practice in the field and transparency and accountability. Because if you say you're doing ESG integration or any kind of sustainable investment approach, you must make it clear to the potential investor what the criteria are, how you consider them, what the decision-making process is, and what portion of the portfolio it's across, period. If an investor doesn't have that information, they should beware.
You'll also start to see more reporting services that will go out and actually do the work.
Right.
And be able to prove to you, you know, this company right. has really good policies towards women. This company has, you know, a great family policy. Whatever happens to be the issue that you're focused on, you'll see many more companies that are getting involved in this now. And it's because there's such a big interest in this field.
Right. There is a, you know, you mentioned earlier that there is a generational divide. And Fidelity Charitable, a large donor-advised fund, just did a survey recently. And I think it was, you know, over 70% of millennials and Gen Xers have made some sort of impact investing decision among their donor-advised funds, but that only 30% of baby boomers or older have. Talk about the generational divide.
So the reality with the non-high net worth crowd, which of course is the majority of millennials, is they're also very interested in this and how do you get product to them. So robo-advisors have been important for that. That's a kind of algorithmic kind of investing. There are SRI products in that. But we really believe that you need to bring the retirement market to have sustainable investment options, because for the vast majority of Americans, to the degree they have investments at all, they're in retirement accounts. Mm. The majority of retirement accounts, whether they're public funds, so you work for a public entity, a government, or they're private funds, you work for a private company or a nonprofit like I do, most of those employers do not provide a sustainable investment option. If we
right.
can change that piece mm-hmm. of the market, we change the investment assets dramatically.
And you see that. Yeah. We've seen a lot of that, that discussion going on. So I think that's really important. The other thing that we see from the private wealth point of view, and I think this is very, very interesting, is it's always been hard to get that rising generation of investors, right, the next gen of the family, to really get interested
right.
in investing.
Right.
And impact investing is such a powerful message to them that it's easier to get them in the room to say, hey, yeah, I would like to know what you're doing in my portfolio, and I would like to know that I'm invested alongside
right.
my values. This actually makes sense. And it, from a parent point of view, it's really very, it's relieving.
It's a way
right.
to get
yeah,
them engaged.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So it's really
right.
been fascinating.
What about the response by professional money managers? And I've certainly asked a number of them who just say, you know, my job is not to do good, it's to deliver results. But of course we're going to invest with companies that have good governance practices. And of course we're going to, you know, invest in companies that are following sound, you know, management practices, that are taking care of their employees. You know, how do you respond to that argument?
I think you have to be much more deliberate than that.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's just a response, right? That's not what an investor should look for. An investor, to Lisa's point, should be, show me proof.
Right.
I want to see proof. I don't want to just know that you bought two or three companies that are doing really well. I want to know that you have a whole portfolio
right.
that is doing what
you
I asked
approach.
You to. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I think one of the issues is the demand piece is driving
Yes.
Some of these investment firms to add options. And so what's yes. happening sometimes is that the additionality of those options is happening before a lot of the firm's employees actually understand what they're doing. So right. you see some big firms with thousands of advisors who have a sustainability platform, an ESG platform, and maybe a fifth or a fourth of their advisors actually have experience in this. And so a big piece of the field over the next 10 years is to educate them.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We have partnered with the College for Financial Planning to create the first sustainable investment designation in the country. And so that will really change the ability of any investor to go to an advisor and say, do you know something about this?
Mm-hmm.
Because the ones who have the credential over the next 5 to 10 years will be the ones that are probably more trusted to actually have the knowledge to do this.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that you have to move along with the tide, right?
Right.
You're going to have to change the way you think about things as we go forward, because it is going to be much more of a definitive field, and not just, oh, we're going to be doing this by accident.
Right. So, I'm thinking $12 trillion in assets. Yeah. It's 26% of all investable assets are now right. devoted to ESG. Lisa, can any institution or any money manager afford not to do and have an ESG approach?
Well, someone asked me at a conference that I spoke recently, how do you convince the skeptics? I said, you convince the skeptics when the client walks. So the client's going to walk at some point.
Uh-huh.
So you best be in front of that.
I think it's the same exact thing that we're seeing, where people will come in and all of a sudden the conversation starts around responsible investing, and you get this great connection. And so it's like, wow, oh, that's a great idea. I didn't think about that. How do you do it? Show me how you do it.
Right.
Let's try it, right? Even if you don't do it 100%, let's put 5%, let's put 10%. You have to get some start.
Yeah, there was an interesting study that 79% of advisors had a client that asked them to provide a sustainable investment strategy for them, and only 39% of them actually were able to do it.
Yeah.
And so there's a gap,
yes.
right? That's a gap that will get filled by people smart enough to figure it out over the next several years.
Mm-hmm. At the end of every Wealth Track discussion, we ask our guests if there's one investment that we should all have one of in our portfolios, what would it be in a long-term diversified portfolio? So Lisa, what would your response be?
So one thing we haven't talked about at all is community investing. How do you place investment assets in underserved communities? And there's great options in every community really across America. Community development credit unions and community development banks. You can get information on those online, and it's cash. And it's low risk, and you can do great things to build up communities, urban, rural, Native American reservations. It's a game changer for people to know that they can do that. It's
community.
So bank with them.
Yeah, you bank with them. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it's kind of different than my investment portfolio, but instead of putting it in a money market fund, put it in one of these community.
Yes.
You remember after the financial crisis, there was this whole campaign, Move Your Money.
Yes.
People were moving their money from big national banks to small local mm-hmm. banks. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Small local banks and credit unions.
Great. And what would your recommendation? Again, this is for a long-term diversified portfolio.
So I think if you want to have a really well-diversified portfolio, you should have impact assets in that. I feel very strongly that is going to be a field that is getting more interesting as time goes by. And there is a lot of proof that the better that the company is from an environmental, social, and governance point of view, the better the returns are going to be. So from there are a lot of different ways you can do it. Now you have ETFs, there are all kinds of strategies where you can go into your, and getting more so in the retirement mm-hmm. assets, because I think mm-hmm. that's going to be very important.
Right.
But you can go into your regular portfolio and you can choose assets that are impact aligned. And
right.
that's going to be, that would be something I would advise.
All right, it's a growing field and with a growing interest. So thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank
Lisa
you.
Thank
Wall,
you.
I really appreciate it. Laura LaRosa, great to have you on Wealth
Thank
Talk
you.
As well.
Thank you.
At the close of every Wealth Track, we try to give you one suggestion to help you build and protect your wealth over the long term. This week's action point is think about your values and how you can apply them in some of your portfolio. As we just discussed, socially responsible investing covers a lot of territory. It can be a decision not to invest in certain industries or to invest in companies and industries involved in activities you believe in. It can mean investing in companies that are applying best management practices or that are involved in projects that will have an impact in underserved communities or countries. The great thing about investing today is that you can make a difference with your investments without sacrificing returns. It can be a winning combination. Well, next week, how to avoid running out of money in retirement. Personal finance experts Christine Benz and Frederick Axeter provide solutions. In this week's exclusive extra feature, Laura LaRosa and Lisa Wall discuss their path to embracing socially responsible investing. Also, feel free to reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for watching. Have a wonderful weekend and make the week ahead a profitable and a productive one.